Three brides mention rugby in this town, I must say. Blank looks all round. It's great to be in Melbourne, and this is without doubt the sporting capital of Australia, and doesn't possibly play one of the great winter codes as much as it might, but has a great one of its own, and it's become obviously an Australian, or virtually the Australian winter code. So I certainly pay tribute to that. Sporting capital of Australia put on a fantastic Commonwealth Games, led by a chairman not unknown to me, and great Melbourne citizen. But it's also, of course, the home of world-class newspaper in The Age, and I'm delighted to be here as representative John Fairfax, but also very much as the managing director of the Age newspaper, in a sense, as well, although the managing director of the Age and all of our businesses in Victoria, Don Churchill, is here. It's also great to be at CEDA. This is my first appearance as CEO of Fairfax at a CEDA event, and there's no doubt that CEDA plays an important role in the public policy dialogue on economic, social and political issues, and I very much appreciate the invitation to be here today. Fairfax is a dynamic and exciting media company in a dynamic and exciting time for media companies. And I am very proud and privileged and pleased to have the opportunity to lead the company at this time. I spent most of March on a trip visiting institutional investors and analysts in Europe and America. I also met with leading print-based media companies in London and New York. We're all wrestling with similar challenges all around the world, but there's no doubt in my mind, from what I could see and from what I was told on this round-the-world trip, that Fairfax has one of the strongest positions in print and online amongst our peers anywhere in the world. I am therefore optimistic about the future of, firstly, of newspapers, and I'll come back to that, but optimistic about the future of Fairfax in particular as a company and in the context of the evolution of the media industry in Australia in particular. I want to discuss both those things today, the future of Fairfax and the changing media industry in Australia. So with respect to Fairfax and the business itself first, there are two key priorities that the management team are focused on and continue to hammer day and night into the business. And if we can do these two things, we feel absolutely confident that we'll continue to be the preeminent media company in Australasia. Firstly, we are utter believers in the future of newspapers, and we're doing everything we can to defend and grow our newspaper position in Australia and New Zealand. We're concentrating on the basics, and I think you'll find, well, I've certainly found in my life, whether it's sport or even politics, and I had a short period in the Prime Minister's office in New Zealand, or in business, understanding what the basics of your business are and absolutely hammering those day after day is a fundamental foundation. So we're concentrating first and foremost on editorial quality. We need to put together papers that people want to read. The quality of what we deliver to our audiences being the best in news, commentary and opinion. The Age newspaper turned 150 years old 2 years ago, and the Sydney Morning Herald turned 175 years old on Tuesday of this week. These are two of the oldest and most respected newspapers in the world. And then these publications did not reach those milestones by accident. And increasingly today, the value of trusted, independent content has never been higher. And at Fairfax, we're utilising better and smarter marketing also to help drive circulation and readership, and we've started to see very positive results from this, particularly the growth in circulation experienced by all our major metropolitan publications over the last 6 months. As of 6 months to the 31st of December. And later today, perhaps first thing tomorrow, we'll report continued circulation growth in all of our major mastheads. The Age's circulation is up in every edition across the week. The Sunday Age's growth is the highest of any paper in the country, and the Age on weekdays is the fastest growing daily newspaper in the country. The Age.com.au has also set another record in the last period, with over 1.4 million unique browsers online. And this is in an age when people are preaching doom and gloom about newspapers. But the success is based on a whole range of things. Firstly, and very importantly, the intense local focus and commitment to the community here in Melbourne and the broader Victoria, led very capably by Managing Director of all of our Victorian operations, Don Churchill. And, of course, outstanding journalism, photography and design, led by editor Andrew Jaspin, which means that we put together a great paper every day. The Age, in my view, is definitively leading the market in breaking news and informing the people of Victoria about the news that lies behind the news, the analysis that makes sense of the news. The work on the Yarra River, some of the work that came out, much of the work initially for the around the AWB scandal and those wonderful photographs that fell into our lap from sources unable to be revealed, were just a fantastic example of breaking news and really engaging people. I mean, I think, from my personal view, the AWB issues, the scandal, if you want to characterise it that way, did not reach public consciousness until those pictures ended up on the front page of The Age, and they were carried in Sydney as well. So the Yarra River, the AWB, security in the state politics, and a whole range of other things are some of the examples. Today, more people read The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald than ever before in the history of the papers. And we're confident because the actions we're taking will continue to be successful in yielding further circulation gains and thereby helping to ensure that newspapers retain their importance in a fragmenting media market. Many of the people in this room will be very aware that television and newspapers have traditionally been the two major media able to aggregate mass audiences for advertisers. And the performance of all major newspapers, and I'm very happy to pay credit to our competitors in this regard as well, all major newspapers in Australia in the recent circulation audits show that newspapers retain the capability to aggregate those mass audiences better than any other medium, and indeed are strengthening their relative position quite rapidly against television in particular, which is seeing its audience fragment much more quickly. But it's not just about the journalistic, although that's the core of it, obviously, the journalistic efforts. We also need to create innovative products for advertisers so that they feel the environment that they're presented with works well for their products and services. So the Melbourne and Sydney magazines are great examples of innovative products for display advertising, and those magazines as standalone, no cover price products are financially extremely viable. They're inserted each month, of course, into the Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Super Panorama, a double broadsheet fold-out, has also achieved a lot of success. Advertising wraparounds, post-it notes on the front pages, zoned real estate, all innovation that's necessary for newspapers to continue to flourish. And if you look at the circulation results in the last little while, it should be no surprise that, in fact, the newspapers that are doing the best are the newspapers that are in the most competitive markets. The Sydney and Melbourne newspapers, where you've got two very capable, powerful, world-scale capability newspaper publishing organisations going head-to-head, you're seeing innovation, you're seeing connection to communities, you're seeing promotions, and you're seeing newspapers as a medium flourish because of it. If you look around the world, you look at the monopoly markets, you will not see the same degree of success of newspapers today. So I think that just as a lesson to all of us, that it's not about the medium per se, it's not about the technology, it's not about the regulation, it's about how good you are at doing your business and understanding what it is that people want to read in the newspapers. I'm delighted to say, of course, in Sydney and Melbourne, we lead the pack in that head-to-head, but part of the reason that we can be so strong is that we've got strong competition. In addition, we've launched two magazines in the last 6 months. Again, great vehicles for advertisers, Travel and Leisure and Smart Investor. So these innovations, combined with the excellent printing facilities we have available now, have increased the offerings we can make to advertisers, offerings that ensure advertisers reach their target markets, and that's a fundamental of newspapers. It's about the quality of the audience that you have as well as the quantity, and provide Fairfax with new revenue streams. as we do see a new equilibrium between display advertising and the various categories of classified advertising developing, it is important that the business develops new streams of revenue, not only across a variety of distribution platforms and going to a variety of devices, and I'll come back to that, but within the printed media as well. But the other important element in ensuring the viability of newspapers, as in every business today, in this low inflation environment that we all exist in, is control of the cost base. And Fairfax has achieved significant cost reductions over the past 3 years, and this will and this needs to continue, and it needs to continue via process simplification and streamlining across the business. So that's the first thing that we're absolutely fundamentally focused on, the quality of our newspapers as evidenced by circulation, advertising, revenue, market share and growth. The second pillar of our strategy, and one which revolves around the principle of diversity, is to build an outstanding digital media business. And there are two elements to this. First, we need to build strong internet businesses in their own right, positions on the web. And second, we need to build a company, a whole organisation at Fairfax that commissions, creates, files and distributes digital content over multiple platforms. And in doing that, has the opportunity to monetise it across those multiple platforms. We have built and acquired very strong digital positions in a number of areas, and as a result, I'm very comfortable to say we own and manage the leading overall portfolio of internet sites in Australasia. We're number one in news, dating and holiday rentals in Australia and New Zealand. We're a strong number two in jobs, homes and cars in Australia, and we're improving those positions on a daily basis. And, of course, the recent acquisition of Trade Me in New Zealand, with its exceptional position in online auctions, effectively the eBay in New Zealand, and growing presence in classifieds, added to our position in news and information, means that we are far and away the number one online internet business in New Zealand. And we've been steadily building these online businesses over several years. And I believe it's utterly fair to say today that we have, for a media company, predominantly still a publishing company, a print media company, in terms of critical mass of the business and the profits now being delivered and forecast to be delivered, the strongest portfolio of digital businesses in Australasia, if not globally, for the type of media company that we are, predominantly publishing-based company in the first place. Today, our capability to develop and distribute our content through multiple distribution channels and over or to multiple devices, even with our content agreements across all four mobile phone networks, is relatively low. And we need to, and we do have clear plans to improve that capability. And one of the ways to help achieve this objective, of course, is to hire and appoint people that fundamentally understand what it'll take to deliver that. And to this end, we recently announced the appointment of Jack Matthews as a new CEO of Fairfax Digital. Jack has telecoms, pay TV and internet experience in New Zealand, Australia, the United States, and most recently Japan, working for some of the largest media companies and telcos in the world. He has the experience and capabilities we need to position ourselves in the rapidly developing online markets, markets in which wireless, mobile, not just mobile phones, but mobile in general through a range of devices, and broadband will all, of course, be absolutely key elements. When combining all of these elements, Fairfax now has the following impressive characteristics, and I guess this is an investment thesis more than anything. A strong, sustainable and vibrant publishing business with very strong cash flows. The business is ex-CapEx. A lot of money was spent on printing facilities. The money was spent wisely. It is very important for newspapers going forward to be able to have access to very high-quality printing and high-quality reproduction on wood-based papers such as newsprint and improved newsprint without having to go into the cost of gloss or other less lower wood-containing papers. The company has strong cash flows, it being ex-CapEx, has a commitment to pay 80% of the dividend out across 80% of net profit as a dividend across the cycle, and today is trading on something like a 5% dividend yield. And you know, you'd say, well, that sounds like a high-quality publishing business. We've heard all that before. But the second half of the equation for Fairfax is that the strong digital position that the business has built in the last year or so will, and this is on analyst forecasts, this certainly isn't a forecast that we've put out into the market, on analyst forecasts mean that around about 20% of the earnings of the company will come out of online or digital businesses, internet businesses, within the next 2 years. And that's very different for a publishing company. As I say, I spent quite a bit of time travelling in Europe and North America recently, talking to fund managers and analysts, and that profile of a publishing company with a very strong and powerful cash flow and a strong dividend yield and good, strong competitive positions in its markets, allied to the growth coming through from internet businesses of that scale, has creates a pretty unique profile for the business. Turning now to some of the changes we think we're going to see in the next little while, I guess most importantly the important issues of media deregulation. Earlier this week we filed extensive comments on Senator Coonan's discussion paper on digital television and proposed changes to media ownership rules. First point I want to make is that any careful reading of her paper shows that she's focused on the big picture, on the entire picture, the entire digital future for Australia. Her paper goes way beyond the traditional issues of media ownership rules. Senator Coonan wants Australian television to fully enter the digital age because of the benefits digital can bring to consumers, and that's a very important component to the package. The issues paper, therefore, is not a media ownership paper by any means, but rather a portrait, or probably more appropriately a sketch, of a digital landscape for Australia's future. There are five major points that we've made in our submission, and I certainly don't intend to go into detail because the Senator has asked that she be given opportunities to absorb the submissions by all interested parties, and then we'll, when she's been able to do that, we'll make those public sometime in the near future. But briefly outlining our position, first, on the broad digital television issues, Fairfax is not in the television business. And so the issues of multi-channeling, anti-siphoning, you know, very emotional issues, HDTV, SDTV, simulcasting, these are issues for the television industry players, and they're not issues that we will be commenting on in any depth at all, and haven't done so in our paper. But, there was a but. As a general rule, and for sensible public policy reasons, the sooner digital television services can be introduced, the better for consumers and the industry. And we think it's important to support what is in the best interests of Australian consumers. Just as it was better to introduce GSM phones sooner rather than later and to move to 3G sooner rather than later, it's better to move to digital TV sooner rather than later. Digital radio is coming in 2009, and we shouldn't have to wait much longer for digital TV. Second, in terms of the points we make to the Minister, on the prospects of two new digital channels formerly reserved for data casting, for all the reasons laid out in the discussion paper, these are potentially of interest. The paper outlines possibilities from pay TV services to mobile video services to narrowcasting and niche services and so on. If these are still born as services because of rules that are too restrictive, just as data casting was neutered 5 years ago, then this important, valuable spectrum, again for consumers, will lie fallow for many years to come. To the extent that the rules permit the robust development of new services, and I want to be clear about this, services that properly are not free-to-air television, we're not proposing in any way some backdoor new fourth free-to-air television channel, but to the extent that the rules permit the robust development of new services, there may be possibilities worthy of attention from a number of players, including Fairfax. But in order to ensure these new digital channels can be fully and robustly utilised, we are suggesting that they be reserved for new electronic players. Currently, free-to-air television, according to the discussion paper, cannot own these two digital channels, and we certainly agree with that restriction. But we would also advocate that it be extended to include pay television operators as well. With new entrants in electronic media operating new digital services, The government's policy can confer an early diversity dividend to accompany media deregulation. Third, and one of the most critical components of media policy is, in fact, telecommunications policy with respect to the internet. As we all know, broadband is an integral part of the future of the media industry all over the world, and it's certainly an integral part of the future of Fairfax Digital. Video on broadband will be an increasing driver of growth, of traffic using the internet, and we intend to be a leader in video on broadband for all of our websites. Therefore, we urge the government to ensure that there are the most aggressive policy settings in place to promote broadband deployment. We believe the government broadly agrees with that. We'd certainly say the same in New Zealand as well, in which broadband deployment is even slower to be uptaken than it is in Australia. And in addition, there must not be any backdoor regulation of video services and content on broadband. It's not our intention that this would be the case, but that spectrum is not used predominantly for internet video services, and as the entire basis of broadcasting regulation is derived from its use of the public airwaves, there's no basis whatsoever for regulation of video via broadband, except, of course, in terms of decency and standards. Fourth, we've made a strong public policy case for regulation, for deregulation of the foreign and cross-ownership rules. We see those as anachronistic and rules that properly ought to change. And fifth, we believe all of these reforms, as a package, should come into place in 2007. With digital channels carrying an array of new services, there is no reason why the reforms to the ownership rules should not also come into immediate effect. If this package comes together and Parliament approves it, what will happen as far as Fairfax is concerned? Well, it's pretty hard to predict, as we know, but markets and shareholders determine the outcome of these sorts of things. But as I have said, and then the chairman of Fairfax has also said on a number of occasions, free-to-air television is not high on our agenda. We see other opportunities that will promote higher growth. But we do want the laws changed because we think markets should be freer. They operate best when they're free, and all options for growth should be available. Finally, with respect to the future and where this is all headed, and I was asked to make some comment in a general sense about the evolution of media markets and what will happen to the media industry generally over the next 5 years. Well, the great American baseball hero and custodian, or mangler, of the English language, however you like to think of it, Yogi Berra, once said, I never make predictions, especially about the future. But it is extraordinarily difficult to forecast where technology and regulation and consumer preference, which I think is something that's often underplayed, but that utterly drives the development of business models, where all of those things are going to take media markets. Now, Google was just a glimmer in a couple of nerds in the United States minds just 5 years ago. Now look what it is today and look what people are forecasting it to be. I don't believe Google's going to be everything that it's forecast to be, but I do believe it's going to be an extraordinary successful business and continue to be so in the new media. A few markers are clear, and I guess we can't prescribe outcomes, but we can say that there are trends and markers that will influence the outcomes. First, broadband will become utterly ubiquitous, whether that's a fixed line or it's wireless, and we see now the telecommunications companies competing ferociously for people on broadband. I think it's a very tough business to be in a carrier or a distributor because there's a lot of competition and in effect, it's a whole lot of fixed costs, and you clearly need the most traffic to be able to get revenue over those fixed costs, and therefore you're driven to compete for audience and probably to compete the economic returns down pretty close to zero, just above cost of capital. So that's a tough place to be, but that's a good place for consumers, and I think it's a good place for media companies because, you know, we're about connecting content and consumers, and if there's ubiquitous broadband and it's cheap, the access is relatively inexpensive, then I think that's a great place for us to be. Secondly, wireless delivery will be central. I think that people increasingly want their information when they want it, how they want it, and therefore wireless, the ability to log into networks from wherever you are through a whole range of different devices will be fundamental to the future. And thirdly, people, because of both of those things, in particular the broadband, people will be looking for richer experiences from their media interaction. So therefore, video content and moving pictures and much richer engagement, including interactive engagement, will be part of the future and a driver of growth for those who can provide it. Fourthly, the degree of scalability. I mean, in some sense, this is just it's very obvious, but I think it's worth stating. The degree of scalability of a company's online business will be a major success factor. There can be relatively high fixed costs, but virtually no variable costs in some of these online businesses. But in order to create a business that makes a sensible contribution to earnings and can fund further growth and will be translated through into superior share price returns or shareholder returns, businesses are going to have to develop scalable models online, which means they're going to have to really understand and have defendable revenue models. It's one of the things we focus most strongly on when we look at our internet investments. What is the revenue model and what share of the total revenue that's going to be available in this category do we think we can achieve? Barriers to entry in principle are low, but hurdles for success are much higher. And once scale is developed, barriers to entry actually can be extraordinarily high in online businesses as they are in the traditional printed media. Fifth, then, as technology continues to fragment mass audiences, particularly, as I said earlier, in television, adaptability and flexibility will be at a premium. Finding the right customers, the right niches of customers, and presenting them with the right content in the way they want to receive it, when they want to receive it will be fundamental. But most importantly in all of that, it's my absolutely clear conviction that content will remain king through the whole evolution of these media markets, which is why I'm optimistic that Fairfax, with its superb journalism, brands, history, heritage, creative content, and in the future access to a wider range of distribution channels and devices and media in order to monetise that content, will be a winner in the next decade of media reform.